This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Donald Trump is set to name a lobbyist who has represented major fossil fuel companies as the energy advisor to the National Economic Council. Mike Catanzaro works for the DC-based lobbying firm CGCN Group and has represented the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, as well as Goldman Sachs, among others. In fact, the NEC is headed by former Goldman Sachs Group President Gary Cohn. In addition to Catanzaro being exactly the type of lobbyist that Trump promised to drain the Washington, D.C. swamp of, he's also known for writing articles more than a decade ago for a conservative website that were heavily in denial of human-caused climate change. Mr. Trump has stacked much of his cabinet with the leaders of a dying and destructive industry at precisely the moment when drastic action is needed to stave off the worst impacts of global warming. My guest is Steve Horn. He is an investigative journalist and a writer for desmogblog.com, where he's been writing about Catanzaro and others. Welcome to the program, Steve.
Good to be on. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about this particular figure. I mean, there are so many to talk about, but he's the latest one. I mentioned that he is a lobbyist that has represented petrochemical firms. He's written articles denying climate change. Can you paint a fuller picture of this man so we can really marvel at the irony of him being named to this post given Trump's campaign promises?
Absolutely. So just to take a step back. So Catanzaro, looking at how he get here, first of all, he was actually part of the Trump campaign team. So the whole notion of him draining the swamp with this lobbyist who was actually an integral part of his energy policy team for his campaign, the irony was already there before he was elected on November 8th. That said, who is Catanzaro a little deeper? As you mentioned, he started his career as a writer, journalist, commentator for the publication Human Events, which has been around for decades, is probably one of the most prominent parts of the early conservative movement in the United States. It's where Ann Coulter, for example, she writes today. And while there, he was writing many articles on all kinds of topics, but several of them were lots of them, maybe dozens, were about climate change or global warming and how it was essentially a hoax in his own language. And there's a whole trove to be dug into in Human Events, which I have not even gotten to, but I just have only grazed the surface on that. Looking at where he went from there, naturally, he shifted into a career working for Congress for a while. And the first person he worked for was James Inhofe, who is the most renowned climate change denier in the United States Senate. He wrote a book called The Greatest Hoax, which is about climate change and how it is what he calls the quote unquote greatest hoax perpetrated by the left wing or by liberals. And so he worked for him on the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. And then after a couple of years of doing that, he got a job working for the Bush administration, first on the campaign in 2004, Bush Cheney, and then for the administration working for both the EPA and the Center for Environmental Council on Environmental Quality. And then he went back to Congress, worked for both Inhofe and John Boehner, who was the majority leader. And then after working for the government for a while, he did what a lot of people do who work for the government for a while for Congress. He went through the revolving door and became a powerful lobbyist with a lot of contacts back in Congress and back at the executive branch. And his clients, you mentioned one of them, but other ones have included Koch Industries, Noble Energy, Devon Energy, and it's really a long list. Literally in the fourth quarter of 2016, you can see, I think he had like 38 clients listed under his name that he was advising for that quarter. So this is a guy who's a very well-connected lobbyist in Washington, D.C., who will now be, if this does go through, he doesn't have to go through the Senate confirmation process, I don't think, but if he does get named, this will be a person who was the epitome of the swamp, as Trump defined it on the campaign trail, leading United States energy policy.
Right. I mean, as deeply enmeshed in pushing the fossil fuel industry as one can possibly have in Washington, D.C., and, you know, really being one of those kinds of people who, you know, that people, even government officials that rely on lobbyists, have to speak out against publicly. So how important is his position? Energy advisor to the National Economic Council may sound a bit obscure. You know, we're not talking about head of the EPA, et cetera. So how important is this position?
Might be the most important. And the reason I say that is because if you look at some of the articles about this hire by, you know, a Green Wire, Politico, and other Beltway publications, basically what they're saying is he's the connector of all these agencies. He's the one that is going to make the energy agenda of the Trump White House move in a synergistic way between through the interagency process. So he's really the one who will make stuff move. You know, someone like Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General, who may soon become the administrator of the EPA. He's never been in Washington. You know, so he's going to be crucial. He's a climate change denier as well, and he's been very controversial in these past weeks since he's been nominated. But without someone like Canton Zara, who has a lot of contacts, who's worked in government before in the Bush White House, you know, the agenda that he's pushing, and then looking at the Department of Energy, other agencies, may not move as smoothly. So Canton Zara was an extremely key hire. And it's important that someone like him will not, you know, he will not be in front of the Senate. He does not have to be confirmed. He's someone who's hired directly by the White House, like General Michael Flynn, for example, or Steve Bannon, these key hires that never had to go in front of an answer to the Congress.
So here we have a person who almost has this position that is, in a way, a behind the scenes, not very, as you said, not very prominent position in terms of having to interface with Congress, but connecting the right people together, giving the right industries the right kind of boost and the backing of the U.S. government. If you see as a whole the people that Trump has put in place, Scott Pruitt, Rex Tillerson, you know, Exxon CEO as our state secretary, and the others that we've mentioned, we and the Goldman Sachs CEO, we have this unholy alliance of top banks that have been implicated in, you know, screwing over the little guy financially, and the fossil fuel industry that have, of course, done the same to our climate. This just can't be what we see as our leadership at this moment. I mean, Steve, this is, we're way past due, really important action on the climate. Could this be what pushes not just the country, but the planet over the edge in terms of global warming?
I think most climate scientists, if they were speaking honestly, would definitely say yes. Like, if this is 4 or 8 years, depending on if he gets reelected, and these same people are pushing these policies, while I should point out, there's lots of climate change denial going on right now, potentially on the EPA, pages being taken down, looking at the Department of Energy, same thing. So climate denial will be the, or sort of quasi-denial will be the posture of this administration. Meanwhile, climate scientists almost uniformly say that, you know, look at their timelines. These are the key years if we're going to do anything about climate change in terms of curbing it, stopping its worst ravages, which are already, you know, starting to be seen across the globe, making it, you know, these ravages worsening. We would have, you know, we really, really needed to act in these next 4 to 8 years. Some say we need to act a lot sooner than that. So this is pretty frightening stuff, given that we really do see, you know, as you mentioned, Rex Tillerson, big oil, being represented as United States diplomatic policy, foreign policy abroad. But then, you know,
and having zero experience to do that, by the way.
Right. Well, plenty of experience pushing big oil's agenda abroad. Is important for that reason. But looking domestically, looking at Canton Zara, looking at who was his most crucial advisor on the campaign trail, that is CEO and founder of Continental Resources, the biggest oil fracking company in the United States, Harold Hamm. you look at these forces and you really see, oh, wow, like, you know, big oil, and you read articles that are coming out now, they really see this as like a heyday. This is like their dream come true. You see quotes, you know, coming from the business press, coming from investor press. So it's frightening. This definitely has frightening implications for ecological and climate change purposes going forward.
And one might even imagine how this is sort of rewriting internal projections in these companies who might have just a year or two ago started to see the writing on the wall, started to understand that they were part of a dying industry. This seems to, is likely having given them a new lease on life at a time when we really need these industries to die a quick death.
Yeah, you know, that gets to what, exactly. That they, like a year or two ago, that you heard discussions of internal carbon tax sort of calculations taking place, and them looking forward to the fact that may be their future.
Yeah, they were accepting their future because they were realizing from the public and some government officials the writing was on the wall.
Correct. Yeah. And so now there are some old guard conservatives who are pushing that. There's a New York Times op-ed that came out. James Baker was one of the co-authors. And so there's still some, old school conservatives who still see this as the future. But I think that at large, the industry sees the floodgates have been open. The spigot's been open for more drilling, less regulations. That's a big promise of the Trump administration, is way less regulations, which means lower costs for more drilling across the United States, both on private lands and public lands. Plus, of course, the whole thing, notion of having an ExxonMobil CEO running U.S. foreign policy means open doors abroad as well.
How did Mike Catanzaro in particular sort of help the fossil fuel industry combat some of the modest gains under the Obama administration, some of the regulations against the worst polluting industries that Obama had put into place? I mean, in a way, we should probably also see his appointment to this position as a stiff rebuke against the past 8 years.
The number one thing that the industry really lobbied against, especially in the last 4 years of the Obama administration, when it started doing a little bit more on oil and gas regulation, was the Bureau of Land Management's regulations on fracking for methane emissions across the life cycle of that on United States public lands. And if you look at what was Catanzaro lobbying against for his clients, one of the main things you see are, it's sort of, it makes sense, they work together. It was lobbying against these regulations, which got tied up in court in the United States Court of Appeals right now, and probably that rule will be completely nixed by the Trump administration anyway, so making the court deliberations moot. So that was one of the things that he was lobbying against. One of the things he was lobbying for, which works as a companion to that, is increased drilling on United States public lands for those same clients, big fracking companies like Devon Energy, Noble Energy, and others. So that was sort of at the forefront of his portfolio on the things he was lobbying for in the past, all the way up until this past quarter four of 2016 on his lobbying disclosure forms.
And by the way, speaking of disclosure, Steve, is he leaving his position at the lobbying firm that he worked at?
So the thing about everything with Catanzaro is that it's come from internal sources in the White House. It's not 100% definitive. He hasn't 100% at least publicly accepted the job. So how that will be worked out is kind of unclear.
I asked the question because we can't take for granted these things anymore. We can't take for granted that a conflict of interest and an ethical double standard are both bad things. Not anymore.
Right. And Trump does have this executive order in place that 5 years after you work for the executive branch, you can't be a lobbyist. But that, of course, has a major loophole in it. That is that you can be an advisor to a lobbyist because of this loophole called the Daschle loophole that Tom Daschle sort of created for himself coming out of the Obama White House. So
even though that sort of thing
that looks like a protection is not taken seriously in Washington, D.C., because there's a whole cadre of what are now known as on-lobbyists, people who generally are acting as lobbyists but don't have to register because of their role as an advisor to other lobbyists.
And yet, more proof that Donald Trump said whatever he had to say to get elected, and that one by one he has very rapidly proved to all his supporters that all of the promises he made in the name of the little guy were simply, you know, a way for him to buy their allegiance. Steve, what's a good place for people to read your work? Is dsmogblog.com the place that you update all of these and keep track of all of these things coming out of the Trump administration?
Yep, dsmogblog.com or at Steve A. Horn on Twitter would be the top two spots I would look for. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about these issues.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks again.
My guest is Steve Horn, investigative journalist and writer for dsmogblog.com. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.